Third thing, safety. If you're trying to stay away from a temptation, for goodness sake, don't place yourself in environments which are going to agitate you. If you're trying to give up alcohol, don't hang out at the pub. I mean, it sounds obvious, but people do these kind of things. If you're trying to give up something, you know, then don't go into places or don't be around individuals who will again fuel those desires within you. Safety. Create a safe situation which gives yourself some room. And the fourth and final thing is taste. If you want to give up a temptation, you know the ultimate way to give it up? Find taste for something that's better. Because once you find the higher taste, once you find something that's better, you look at that temptation and it no longer feels very, very attractive. Param drishtva nivartate. Yes, Krishna says. So if you want to give up temptation, it will cost you. C stands for conviction. Intellectual level. O stands for be open. Emotional level. S stands for safety. Practical level. And T stands for taste. Spiritual level. If you strengthen yourself on all four of these levels, you will be able to give up temptation. And then you will be able to achieve amazing things in life. And most importantly, by restraining this force of lust, you can develop love. How amazing if we could have pure love in our hearts. Then you wouldn't walk through this world, you would float through this world. But right now we are a bit starved in love. Because we think we have love. Sometimes we have a glimpse of love. Sometimes we have a feeling of love. But it's not substantial love, because in our heart there is still a lot of lust, a lot of selfishness. So Krishna is saying to Arjuna, just be patient, be calm. Try to control your lust and this desire to enjoy, exploit, and just engage yourself in the higher spiritual endeavors in a pure way, and you will awaken something much higher which will really satisfy your heart. And so that is the offer of the Bhagavad Gita. In the world today, when people are struggling with so many addictions and temptations, the Bhagavad Gita gives the highest perspective to overcome it. And that is what we are reflecting on today. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Okay, so over to you. Maybe you have some question, you have some comment. Yes, at the back there. I don't know if there's a mic, otherwise you have to shout loudly. Yes, Prabhu, yes.
So, I'm unable to frame a question, but I have a thought which is not framed properly.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So the thing is, being in a spiritual journey, for instance, you talked about having the goal of achieving something, getting a job, doing something. In spiritual journey, we are taught to not have anything like this. Like, why do you need a job? For bigger money. You don't need money in this journey or position that boosts your ego, so you don't look up there. So there are a lot of things which happen in this process which makes you lose interest in your life. I know that there is some flaw in this thought process, but what is the flaw which...
Okay, so it seems that once we take up spiritual life, we lose all of our ambitions. We don't want to climb to the top of the corporate ladder. We don't want millions of pounds in the bank account. We don't want power, prestige, popularity. So what else is there then to live for? Is it that spiritualists just become unambitious? Spiritualists are the most ambitious. Srila Prabhupada came to America at 69 years old. And what did he do in the next 12 years? He circled the globe 14 times. He opened 108 temples. He initiated 5,000 disciples. He translated 60 books. He gave over 4,000 lectures. And he made Hare Krishna a household word in every single major city of the world. Now that seems to me to be a pretty inspired person. That seems to me to be a pretty ambitious person. One Srila Prabhupada said, I came to America with 40 rupees. And now practically there is a mansion in every single city in the world. He said, what businessman ever did that? Of course, in the most humble way as possible. So Srila Prabhupada, he was the most ambitious. He was the most inspired. Spiritualists don't become unambitious. They give up the ambitions of this world because they say those things, they're too small. I am now the senior partner in the investment bank. Too small. So what? What's so good about that? But have you controlled your mind? Have you controlled your senses? Not that I haven't. So spiritualists have ambitions. You know, one of the symptoms of a great spiritualist, avyartha kalatvam, they can't bear to waste one moment of time. Why? Because they got too much things to do in life, too many amazing things. One sure sign that you're not inspired in your life is if you're constantly subjected to oversleeping. Because the most inspired people in the world, they can't bear to waste any time because life is too valuable. So when you become a spiritualist, you become the most ambitious. But you don't become ambitious for the temporary things of this world. You become ambitious to connect to God. You become ambitious to serve the world. You become ambitious to make other people's lives beautiful. And therefore, this becomes so much a goal which consumes your mind that all these temporary temptations just disappear. I don't have any time. Does it make sense? So as a spiritualist, you are the most ambitious because you're trying to achieve the greatest thing. Yes.
Then how do you define or differentiate Maya and desire? So sometimes the desire could be end up in the Maya after pursuing 20 years. And you think desire and Maya both are...
So how do we differentiate between desire and Maya? So desire is the volition of the soul. So all of us have desire. Whether you're a spiritual person or you're a material person, you can't live without desire. Because desire means to be alive, means you desire something. There's no question of becoming desireless. We are souls, we always desire. So everyone has desire. Now, there is the force of Maya, which is the force of material illusion. And when someone is overcome by that force, then their desires become material. So desire overcome by Maya. It's like a formula. Desire plus Maya equals material desire. Kind of rhymes, yeah? Maya plus desire equals material desire. Okay? As soon as you overcome Maya, then that desire becomes spiritualized. So it's not that Srila Prabhupada didn't have desires. Once there was a yogi, and they took a picture of him in the newspaper, and there was a mound of money, and he was like this, like, nah. So it was like a, you know, picture in the newspaper. So Prabhupada saw it. He said, call the photographer and take a picture of me, and I'll be like this. I'll take all of that money. Material desire? Maya? No. I want the money so I can use it for serving Krishna. That is desire minus Maya equals spiritual desire. So if you bring Krishna into your life, then there's no more Maya. Krishna Surya Sama Hoya Maya Andhakar. Yaha Krishna Taha Nahi Maya Radhikar. Krishna is like the sun, and Maya is like darkness. Yaha Krishna, wherever there is Krishna, Taha Nahi, there cannot be Maya Radhikar, any opportunity for Maya to be. So if you want to overcome Maya by just saying, no, I need to run, no Maya, no illusion, no, you won't do it. But if you bring Krishna into your life, then Maya will disappear, because Yaha Krishna Taha Nahi, Maya cannot stay there. So you bring Krishna, add Krishna to every aspect of your life. Food plus Krishna equals prasadam. Music plus Krishna equals kirtan. I could give you many more examples. There's so many. As soon as you add in Krishna, then it all becomes wonderful. So you just add Krishna in. When you have a password on your computer, don't just be like, whatever your people, Krishna 108. So then when you enter your password every time, Krishna is there. When you have, at your home, put pictures of Krishna. Isn't it? You're from India, you've seen. In the rickshaws, they don't care for the speedometer. Pull the speedometer. Who wants to follow the speed limit anyway? Take it out, put a picture of Krishna, because if I'm driving and I hit someone, at least I'll see Krishna. You bring Krishna anyway, don't do that here. You need to also follow the speed limit, but bring in Krishna. Bring in Krishna everywhere where you can bring him in. When you're driving, hear about Krishna. When you're walking, chant Krishna's names. Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna nivesha. Yeah, this way or that way, somehow or other, bring in Krishna. As a Krishna consciousness is so beautiful, you don't have to give up your desire. Just connect all your desires and bring Krishna. Make Krishna part of the party. Krishna is not like, don't have a party. It's just like, let's have a party together. So just bring him in. Does it make sense?
Thank you. Yes.
I recently had a conversation with
I think there's a mic coming for you.
I recently had a conversation with a devotee, and he was very depressed. And I was talking with him, and I asked him, "So, what are the things that you like?"
Jai Shri Shri Jagannath Paladev Subhadra Maharani Ki.
And usually I went to kirtan with him. He's how we always read books together and stuff. But this time he was just continuously depressed. He couldn't get out of the state of this depression. And kirtan. Well, it's okay, reading okay, but I'm not getting happy. So how to break out of this mental, state of being absolutely depressed, although you have all the beautiful things around you?
So sometimes even when someone is surrounded by so much spiritual opportunity, still sometimes we're overcome by negativity, by feelings of depression. Sometimes depression is a very taboo thing in this world. People don't want to talk about it. But my understanding is that everyone goes through some level of depression in their life, isn't it? Some days you wake up, everything is fine, and you just think, I don't feel so, why? Everything's fine. Yeah, but I don't feel. So Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that we are always subjected to the modes of nature. You see, the modes of nature are in the world. You understand the modes of nature: ignorance, passion, and goodness. So that exists in everything around us, but that also exists within us. And therefore, all of us are to some extent subjected always to being overcome by ignorance. And when the mode of ignorance within us becomes more and more prominent, then what happens is this feeling of depression, this feeling of uselessness, this feeling of lethargy, apathy, complete uninspiration about life, it comes about. So the real question is, how do we fight the ignorance within us? So the first very, very important thing is association with spiritual people. Because if you constantly are surrounded by people who are inspired, if you are constantly surrounded by people who are feeling, connecting, then it will constantly give you that inspiration to do it. Spiritual people carry us. But the problem is, what happens when we become depressed or overcome by ignorance is we tend to distance ourselves more and more from the spiritual people. But that distance is, you're creating a bigger, bigger problem. Rather, you need to place yourself with those people. Just like many of you are from India. So you know what it's like when you go on a Mumbai train, isn't it? It's completely packed. And then your station is coming and you're thinking, how in the world am I going to get to the door? But you don't need to worry. You just need to get to some point in the carriage. And then once the door opens, the door is always open anyway. But once it comes to the station, everyone starts rushing out and you don't even need to walk. The crowd will carry you. So association is like that. But oftentimes what we're doing is, when we are overcome by ignorance, we create a gap. We move away from the devotees. We move away. We go into our little homes, in our little bubbles, and then we... So first thing is association. Second thing is, if you want to fight the ignorance which brings about this kind of depressive state, then we need to develop more and more sattva in our life. You'd be amazed. The environment that surrounds you, the food that you eat, the kind of daily lifestyle that you have, all of this has an effect on your mindset. Even the amount of light in your room has a difference. Did you know in the northern part of Sweden, during the winter time, they have like 23 hours of darkness because they're on that part of the globe. And they found that the suicide rates in that part of the year are much higher. Because there's a sense that when you're around darkness all the time, then you also develop that ignorance within you. When do people do the most stupid things? In the day or in the night?
In the night.
Because it all has an effect. So we need to... This is why Krishna's Bhagavad Gita is so amazing. Because it's a life manual. It's teaching you how to live and counteract all of these... People are trying to counteract it through medicine, through chemicals, through all kinds of artificial... And they're basically aggravating the whole problem. Now, I will add one other thing here. If someone is going through such a thing, like therapy and things like that can also help. Sometimes we also just need to speak. This is also another important point. But therapy, it may not get to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is that we haven't found love, spiritual love. So therapy can help. And then ultimately we have to become connected. So these were some ideas. It's a big topic and I appreciate you raising that, because this is the reality. And if anyone is going through that, don't feel that there's something wrong with you, that it's only me. No, in this day and age, everyone goes through these things. So speak, be open, take help. Change your lifestyle and you can come out of it. It's amazing. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, the verse says, Arjun put his bow down depressed. Even Arjun was depressed. Depressed? Really? Yeah, because we have a certain conception. Yes, he was depressed. He was overcome by that mode of ignorance.
son.
I see many hands and then I don't want to miss someone else, so I just go, okay, yeah. Okay, here, here, and then I see a hand there.
Hi, Krishna. So I asked this question that I'm very shy about presenting Krishna to people, and then they, like, somebody sees my smartphone lighting up and there's Krishna. I feel very shy about it, very, like, I think it might be wrong. Maybe if it's wrong, what is wrong and how can I overcome this?
Oh, your shyness about being a devotee of Krishna and sharing, yeah. Yeah, there's a sense in which in life sometimes we're very self-conscious. You see, we all want to be accepted. We all want to be appreciated. We don't want to stick out from the crowd. In my life, I never wanted to stick out from the crowd. That was my goal of life, that I should merge into the crowd. But then what happened when I was about 17, I shot up in height. So I was already like double the size of everyone. I'm like, oh God, I just want to stick into the crowd. Anyway, I thought maybe no one will notice. And then later on, I thought, let me just merge into the crowd. And then I became a Hare Krishna. Oh God. Then you completely stand out of the crowd. Then later on, I thought, at least I'll merge into the Hare Krishna crowd. But then I became like a brahmachari in bright orange. So then again, I was sticking out. Then I thought, anyway, maybe I'll be able to just be a bit more low-key. And then nowadays I kind of walk around with one of these sticks everywhere. And then you kind of like stick out again, you know? So I was also like that. I never wanted to stick out. I never wanted to like, you just wanted to kind of be in the crowd, be accepted. And you know, in the beginning you can do that. You take some time to become comfortable with being a devotee of Krishna. Sometimes, you know, when there's an endangered species in the world, then they have something called a sanctuary, isn't it? It's like these very, like, you know, delicate birds. So they're in a sanctuary, it's very controlled, not subjected to the world, so that they can grow a little bit strong. And then when they're strong enough, they can fly. So maybe you need to be in the sanctuary. Build your confidence, build your conviction. But then at one point in your life, you need to fly. How long are we just going to be like... just fitting into the world? When I joined the monastery, one of the monks told me, you have to resist the temptation to be normal. I said, we shouldn't be normal? He said, no. He said, because those who are now considered normal accept the values and principles of an insane world. But we want to be normal. We want to fit in. But what you want? You want to be normal? You want to fit in with this crazy world? It's crazy. This world is absolutely mad. Am I exaggerating? Maybe. We do all of these things. Like, say, for example, years ago, people used to go from place to place by riding a bike. And that was good because they got to the place and it was good for their health. But later on, we became advanced. So then we have motorbikes and cars. So nowadays, people whiz around from place to place in motorbikes and cars. And then at the end of the day, when they're completely exhausted, what do? They pay 30 euros, go to a gym and sit on a bike and sweat themselves and go absolutely nowhere. But this is normal. This is normal. This is what we do. That's normal. Everyone should go to a gym, right? It's good for your health. Can you imagine what people 100 years ago would have thought if they saw someone in a room riding a bike, sweating like anything, paying for it, And going absolutely nowhere? I mean, it's absolutely mad. It's absolutely crazy. This world is mad. But we've been living in it so long, we think it's normal. And then what we try to do is we also try to be normal, and in the process we also become part of the madness. So at a certain point you think, why is it so mad? Krishna is amazing. He's beautiful. He's the one who can fulfill our heart's desire. We're looking for love. We're looking for relationship, for reciprocation. Krishna is right there. So why don't I want to tell the world about Krishna? So let it come naturally. In a certain point, it will come. You'll become Krishna. You'll not just become Krishna conscious, you'll become Krishna confident. And you know what? Shall I tell you another thing? We're very self-conscious, but actually out there, people are looking. Before I became a monk, I finished university, so I wanted to go to India. But, you know, students have debts, you know, no money. So I needed to get some money together to go to India when I was 21. So when I graduated from university, I decided to become a baggage handler at Heathrow Airport. So you know those guys, those people that basically throw your luggage and break everything. I was one of those guys. But I didn't break anyone's luggage. So I was loading these. So you know, it was a very like, I don't know how they say in German, it was a very like a macho. You understand? Macho, like a very male-dominated environment. So like, you know, the men, you know, like. So like, I was getting into Krishna consciousness. So then I was thinking like, I want to chant, I want to read, but I couldn't do it in the staff room because I was like, these guys, they're not going to understand, you know. So what I used to do in Heathrow Airport is in the break, I used to go to like gate 1008, right at the other side of the airport where it was quiet. And then I would sit on the seat and then I would go like this and I'd just do my chanting, my reading, you know, in peace. So once I was doing that, and then I heard a sound, Sandeep, that was my name before, Sandeep. And I thought, wow, who's this? Maybe it's Krishna calling me. There's no one here. Like, it wasn't Krishna. And then I looked forward and it was one of the people I was working with. So he looked at me, he goes, what are you doing? What in the world are you doing? So I was like, oh my God, now I've got to explain to him. I'm a devotee, Krishna, chanting, meditation. I was, oh. Anyway, I had to be honest. So I said, oh, you know, I do a bit of meditation. It's Krishna, nothing too dangerous. It's okay. He said, no, tell me more. Tell me. So he was like wanting to go in deep. Anyway, I had a 1 hour conversation with him. And this person was so interested. Not only that, he went back to the staff room and he told everyone, you know this guy? He's like, he's into Krishna, he meditates, he's into yoga. He told everyone. And then the next day I came into the staff room and they like rolled like a red carpet out for me. They were like, sit down, this is now your Vyasasana. I became like the guru. I became the guru of like Air France staff room, you know? And I realized all of these people were actually into it. All of these people were actually asking these questions, but they had no answers. What did we do at the beginning of today? I asked all of you, what are the questions that people, every single person asks in their life? And all the answers are here. So at a certain point, we become confident enough to know that Krishna consciousness is actually what everyone's looking for. Right now, we're not kind of convinced. Right now, we're thinking, Krishna consciousness is good for me, but I don't think all these guys are going to be into it. But later on, you realize, no, this is what everyone's looking for. Because what does George Harrison write in the beginning of the Krishna book? Everyone is looking for Krishna. Some know it, some don't, but everyone's looking for Krishna. So at one point you develop that confidence that, you know what, I've got nothing to be embarrassed about. I've got nothing to be, this is what everyone's actually looking for. So yeah, be confident, be bold. And if for some time you don't want to like go out there and advertise yourself as a Hare Krishna. That's also okay. Be comfortable. But with time, if you can share